You're listening to The Mitch Albom Show on the great voice of the Great Lakes, 760 WJR.
So we've talked a lot on the show about the impact of the change in the auto no-fault law. And while it has put a few hundred dollars in the pockets of Michigan drivers, it has had catastrophic effects on those who have suffered catastrophic injuries and the care that they used to have versus what they now get. Rebecca Seitz is the writer and producer of the podcast Silent Crash, which basically came about as a result of her looking into what was the motivations for changing that law in the first place. Also the CEO of One Seat Productions. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what did you find when you started looking into this?
Well, this is the first time I've ever brought a story to the public without knowing the ending. So it's sort of what I'm finding as I go. And it looks like the individuals who were responsible for bringing this law about had a lot of motivations that had absolutely nothing to do with attempting to lower insurance premiums in the state. And so, unfortunately, they've caused mass chaos and, like you said, a crisis of care in the state for these catastrophic car accident survivors.
And what was their motivation then?
Well, some of them we can't say publicly for two reasons. One, I really want to be wrong. And two, there are very large reasons that require me to have much more evidence, according to our attorneys, before I talk about them. But some of them are known. We know it's out there. And I want to say before I say any of this, anything I'm about to say, anyone could find if they just did the research and connected the dots. So from what I can tell so far, there were some threats made to your governor by very wealthy people who would use their wealth and their influence to create campaigns in the state to destroy things that she cared about. And so they told her that unless she agreed to sign this bill, that they would create a campaign that would destroy auto no-fault altogether throughout the state. And she had been promising her entire career to not hurt auto no-fault. So that's a rock and a hard place of, you know, if they're going to make good on their threat, you'll have nothing, or you can sign this now and hope that you can fix it later. And then the individuals on the other side of the political aisle were in the process making promises to others that they would significantly rein in the expenditures that were being made underneath the auto no-fault program. The insurance companies, it's well documented, have never liked this program because it costs them money and affects their valuations on Wall Street. And it looks like they got exactly what they deserved. Under this law, there's no way that auto no-fault can continue in this state. It's just a slow death, not even really a slow death. Within, you know, by this summer, there won't be any providers left.
You've already seen, and again, this information is out there, but why don't you bring it to our audience's attention? What kind of effect this has had on the industry that helped people who were victims of catastrophic crashes, the rehabilitation industry, the facilities that people would be able to go to, that we always had the finest ones in the country because your care was taken care of for the rest of your life if you suffered a catastrophic auto injury here in Michigan. So in terms of closings, jobs lost, give us some detail.
Well, there was a study that was released by the Brain Injury Association of Michigan just this week, but that study, the findings of those study are a bit dated because the surveys took place in October and this law took effect on July 2nd of last year. So you can find those, the outcome from that study online, but since that study was released, we know now that over 60 care provider companies have closed. We know that at least six people have died for lack of care. We know of two more that will probably be gone by the end of this month because they're losing their care. We know that thousands of people are out of work. We know that patients, because they can no longer have care in their homes, are faced with the choice of either going to a care facility, and many of them cannot find care facilities because they've now filled up. And so they're going to hospitals because without 24/7 care, things like the tube that is in their throat that keeps them breathing because they can't take a breath on their own that gets clogged at least once a week, no one will be there to unclog it, which means they won't be able to breathe, which means they'll suffocate and die. So they have to have 24/7 care.
Right.
Or some of these patients have to be turned every 2 hours. That's a two-person job. If they don't, they get bed sores. Bed sores lead to sepsis. That leads to death. So say, when we say that they need 24/7 care, which is not something I really understood before I was made aware of this entire community and issue, I really have a grasp, I think, now on why they need 24/7 care. And it literally means for many of them, you have 18,000 of these kinds of patients here in the state, 18,000 catastrophic car accident survivors. It really means life or death for them. So it, for me, and one thing that's not understood, I think, is that you had this amazing situation here in Michigan, unlike anything else in the rest of the nation, where someone had the opportunity, like if a little child was hit by a car, a mom could, or a dad could leave their work and could stay at home and take care of that child. And while they would give up all of their benefits and all their 401k and all of that, they could offset at least the financial cost of that decision because they could submit their hours for an hourly reimbursement. And that would be, that was part of the, what was covered by the right. NCCA, by their insurance. This bill reduced that to only being able to report 56 hours of work. Well, when you need two people, 24 hours a day, 56 hours of work is one person, 8 hours a day. So now all of a sudden, all of these people who quit their careers to take care of their family members are left without the money coming in. So they're losing their homes. They're losing their cars. They're unable to put food on the table, much less make up the difference in the medical care that has been cut for their loved one that they left their career for. Right. It's just, it's absolute catastrophe across
the state. And unless people think that, well, yeah, but they're probably cheating the system and probably not really putting in the hours. Remember, this is for victims of catastrophic auto crashes, people who in general are in wheelchairs, who are unable to move, who need, as you just pointed out, Rebecca, you know, turning and all kinds of tasks. From bedroom, bathroom tasks to bathing tasks, things that none of us would be crazy about doing. And the first thing that people think of is, well, they're probably cheating the system. Having gone to so many people's homes who are in this situation and seeing the tragedy of a home that because of a car accident, someone is left without the ability to do the basic tenets of life, and people still hang on to their loved ones, and they treat them with love and care and respect, and even though they cannot do even the basic human functions, and here you have insurance companies and cynics saying, oh, they're probably cheating the system. And I would just invite those people to go one time and spend 10 minutes in a home that has to take care of someone who's a victim of a catastrophic car crash and see what they go through on a daily basis and how their life has lost the fun elements of it and the spontaneity elements of it. And they can't just go out whenever they feel like it because they have somebody to take care of 24 hours a day. And we're worried about, well, they're taking advantage of the system. And so we put more money in the pockets of the insurance companies because, of course, they don't have enough, and took it out of the handful, I mean, really, relatively speaking, this is not a lot of people in our state, and took the money out of their pockets.
You know, I looked into that fraud claim because, you know, of course, I'm from Florida. I didn't know anything about this until Rebecca Bond Tucker called me and told me this is happening in my state. And frankly, I thought there was no way it could be the truth. I thought maybe there was just information she didn't have, and I thought, I'll go figure it out for her and then tell her. It was very arrogant of me. But when I looked into it, and I just said, Rebecca, I don't understand why this is happening. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody's insurance is really being lowered by this. What's the real reason for this? Everybody does things. Humans act under motivation all the time. We always do. So what's the real reason behind this? And I was hearing, oh, there was fraud. Oh, there was fraud. And I thought, okay, well, was there fraud? And so I actually went to adjusters at insurance companies, and I said, talk to me about this issue of fraud. Were you seeing fraud? Of all the adjusters I've talked to, and there are many of them, I have heard of two instances, both of which were caught by the adjusters. So the interesting thing to remember there is that the system had a mechanism in place to catch fraud. Any system, medical or otherwise, is going to have fraud in it. And so the trick is to put a system in place that has checks and balances to catch bad actors. Right. And this system had that. It had adjusters. It had supervisors who were overseeing adjusters. the insurance companies were not paying out claims without reviewing them. So there actually was no widespread fraud happening from the catastrophic car accident community. There were more instances of fraud happening on the collision side, but even those were being caught by adjusters. So that's just not in line with the reality of what was happening, this claim that there was widespread fraud, especially among attendant care hours. And when I couldn't find it, I went around to, you know, the lobbying organization of the insurance companies in the state, the Insurance Alliance of Michigan. And so I started looking at all that they have put out. So far, I've not found any release of any actual evidence of widespread fraud from the IAM. I know it's a claim that they make. Yeah. But I can't find what the claim is actually
based on. Of course it's a claim they make because it gets people, yeah, there must be fraud, you know, without having to prove it. Did you find that there was pressure to get this law passed from Detroit-based interests and business interests that felt that the insurance rates were too high in Detroit and it was keeping people from moving in and keeping people from, you know, investing in Detroit, and it would be a good thing if we got rid of this?
I did find that there were Detroit-based individuals who were involved in trying to get this law passed, and I did find that their publicly stated reason for doing that was to lower insurance rates in Detroit. What I also found was that wasn't the reason they were doing it. So
what was?
When you well,
it's going to be another one of those lawyer things. Huh?
It's one of those lawyer things. I can tell you, though, again, anybody can look. Two of the most involved Detroit-based individuals who were involved in this were, of course, Mike Duggan and Dan Gilbert. And Dan was one of the individuals who did use his wealth and his influence to threaten the governor with a public act that he was going to do of trying to turn the entire state against auto no-fault. He's on the record as having said he was going to do such a thing. That's not something I discovered. It's something I found in my research of what he said to other people. But the idea that they were authentically doing that to try to lower insurance rates, look, if you're paying $6,000 a year for your insurance, how in the world is affecting the $180 part of that $6,000 bill going to lower your insurance rate? It's not. The math just doesn't even work. I mean, math's not even my strong suit. I'm a storyteller, but I can tell that if my bill is $6,000 and suddenly my $180 portion of it goes down to $80, which is what has happened, that's not really going to fix my $6,000 bill. So they were trying to impact the portion of the bill that was negligible. And I was having this conversation yesterday with one of the providers. This didn't really, they've championed that this gave people choice. Now you can opt out of having this unlimited coverage if you get hit. The only people who can afford to opt out are the people who could afford to pay for it.
Right, in the first
place. A single
place.
Mom trying to feed your five-year-old at night can't say, right. Oh, sure, I'll pay another $200.
Rebecca, you're clearly extremely well-versed in this for someone who came to it from the outside. And you have a podcast now that is basically about this? And Silent Crash is just about this issue?
I do. I started the podcast because I was discovering so much that I thought this is such a multi-layered story, the motivations of the individuals who brought this about. I need to just tell it as it's happening because I'm not going to be able to wrap my arms around it otherwise, because I also knew that I needed the public to tell me what they knew. I'm not from Michigan. I don't know its politics and its governance and things like that. So I started Silent Crash on October 27th was our first episode, and I was so naive. I was like, we'll do a few episodes. It'll get fixed. It'll be no big deal. And here we are in January, unfortunately, heading into our 12th episode releasing next week. And with each episode, I simply share, well, this is the part of the story happening underneath this story that I've uncovered this week.
Well, people can find this wherever they get podcasts, Silent Crash.
Yes, it's on every major podcast platform worldwide. About 80% of the audience is in Michigan, and it's in almost every state in the nation. We have listeners right now, and in about a dozen countries.
Well, I'm sure this won't be the last conversation we have with you, and I thank you for taking time to look into this as effectively as you are, because that's what helps people understand what was a very complex issue, but in many cases, a badly motivated one, if not an evil one. So, Rebecca Seitz, I'm sure we'll talk to you again. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Silent Crash is the name of that podcast. If you want to go listen to it, folks. Back with more right after this.